hacking the suffering and despair, hacking to the unfair advantage of those lucky enough to be born into one family or another, into one condition or another, hacking to the circumstantial evidence that proves the obvious.
Thank you for tuning in to The Queer Truth, a podcast that takes on a variety of topics from pop culture to everyday life. I'm Chantel C. You can call me CC, and I'm joined by my partner in organizing, Denise.
Hello. Good morning.
You ready
for this?
Okay, you're awake. Okay. You ready?
Yeah, let's get into it. Let's get it. Let's go.
Okay, so let me give a few updates for the things we've already discussed. One, R. Kelly went and got him that attorney that Bill Cosby had, who eventually left his team. But the one who was doing all the press, everybody's mad at her, the black woman.
Yes. What's her name?
No, not going to come up with it right now. But okay. He went and got her. He's like...
She was giving bomb interviews. She was doing well.
Right. She's more of a PR attorney, in my opinion. And Usher is being... Now, okay. Granted, that lawsuit that we heard about was old, right? It just surfaced. But somebody has updated their lawsuit on Saturday. Mind you, our podcast comes out on Friday. On Saturday, from $10 million to $40 million, because she was like, what? He paid out other people? This isn't the first time this has happened?
Oh, snap. So he had a series of, he was just a serial herpes giver?
Yep. Like you said, the STI stealther.
Wow.
So just to give those little updates, the tea is real.
Well, I was actually feeling some sort of way about her only getting $1 million. I was just like, what kind of three coins is that? Like, I mean, could you get at least some frankincense and myrrh with that? Like, that is a horrible settlement. Just a one?
I think
you know the lawyer probably
modest.
Lawyer and taxes probably cutting into at least a third of that. And then you ain't getting no money.
None. We already discussed it.
Oh, but I don't know. Okay.
You don't know what?
Well, I mean, I definitely think, you know, the R. Kelly legal situation, the Bill Cosby legal situation, the Usher legal situation, it shows that with enough money that your representation can actually shield you from the consequences of all manner of criminal wrongdoing. So I think there was a myth, especially in the black community, that didn't apply to black men. OJ did a great job.
I was just
Johnny Cochran did a great job in being like, okay, me too. Right? Yes, girl. All right, let's keep moving.
Okay, we're going to keep moving and talk about the big news coming out of the USA this week. Cheeto felt the need to announce on Twitter that there would be a so-called ban on transgender people serving in any capacity in the U.S. military. Now, as we all know, this man is dedicated to unraveling every aspect of President Barack Obama's presidential legacy. And this particular ban would reverse what was a gradual transformation of the military under President Obama, whose administration announced last year that transgender people could serve openly in the military. President Obama's Defense Secretary Ashton B. Carter also opened all combat roles to women, which was highly controversial. Let me tell you, my friends who are special forces, we got into it. And he appointed the first openly gay army secretary. So there was a lot of things. And obviously, you know, much further back under President Obama, Don't Ask, Don't Tell was repealed, right? So there were a lot of things that were happening going in the right direction. And what some people might not know because of the shock and awe of the tweets is this comes because there were some Republicans who were upset about the military or the Department of Defense covering the medical costs that comes along with transitions. And this minor dispute over if taxpayer money should pay for gender transition and hormone therapy for transgender service members was threatening to kill a $790 billion defense bill, defense and security spending package, that was scheduled for a vote this week. On top of that, that bill includes the money that Cheeto needs to build that wall that he was promising. But obviously, you know, we don't do policy politics too much here because mm-hmm. we don't have time for it. But I do want to go into some of the reactions we saw from the pop stars, because this is our pop segment. Caitlyn Jenner, who a white mm-hmm. boy claimed to be the most famous transgender person in the world. Sorry, I wouldn't agree with that, but okay. Caitlyn was in her feelings and, you know, quoted a tweet from Cheeto that said, quote, "Thank you to the LGBT community. I will fight for you while Hillary brings in more people that will threaten your freedoms and beliefs." Now, that was a tweet from Campaign Times.
Mm.
For whatever reason, Caitlyn believed it, took it at face value. She quoted that tweet and then said, quote, "There are 15,000 patriotic transgender Americans in the U.S. military fighting for all of us. What happened to your promise to fight for them?" Obviously, people went in on her and were like, "You're stupid. If you ever believed that was going to happen, you're really stupid, because we didn't believe it. We knew he was never there for us." Now, to just give you some numbers, there was a research study carried out by RAND Corporation on behalf of the Pentagon. They discovered that somewhere between 2,000 and 11,000 active duty troops are transgender. Some people estimate that number to be as high as 15,000. So that's where the number 15,000 comes from. If you also want to know about these healthcare costs that keep getting brought up, they estimated that the healthcare costs would rise from $2.4 million to $8.4 million a year, which represents something around a 0.13% increase in spending. Now, mind you, they already spend double digits in the millions on people with penises who have erectile dysfunction or want Viagra. Double-digit millions. So then we had some interesting comments from Chelsea. Chelsea E. Manning, who some of you might remember, is a transgender woman who was put in jail for doing what people do with good conscience. She called out the military on some nonsense. She tweeted, quote, "So biggest, baddest, most $$ military on earth cries about a few trans people but funds the F-35? Sounds like cowardice," end quote. Then you had Laverne Cox bringing up the subjects of trans visibility and rights being denied. It's about not wanting trans to be out, not wanting trans to be visible, not wanting trans to take up public space. And then Entertainment Weekly interviewed quite a few people who we know from different RuPaul's Drag Race. So they talked to Peppermint, who I love me some Peppermint. They talked to an America's Next Top Model contestant, Isis King. I liked Isis too, to be honest. They talked to the Magician's actress, Candace Kane, and they talked to Trace Lissette, who's from Transparent, Jazz Jennings from I Am Jazz's, and about their initial responses to Trump's sentiment, if you will, and what the future for equality looks like in America, as well as how community allies can assist their trans brothers and sisters. So there were a lot of pop stars weighing in on this, and most of them were on the right side of it. Most of them were making it a personal issue. I'm not sure if that's the right way to go, because if you make it a personal issue, you'll never reach that base that Cheeto was speaking to, right? He was obviously making that statement to speak to his Republican base, to remind them that he's their man, even though he claims to be the man of the people. What do you think about all this?
This has to do with offering up fresh meat so that you could fleece the masses on some other greater level, right? And this has been a Republican strategy for a long time. So they'll put abortion rights on the chopping block so that they can union bust, right? And make it a right to work space. Or they'll put some sort of like cultural win, especially for conservative Christians up there. And it's largely symbolic, because the policy implications don't affect at least as many people as what they would be taking away. In this case, we have a political climate where we have like a very, very, very unpopular president who is trying to pass a widespread policy that will undo healthcare basically in the United States. And it's not working out for him. It's not working out for the party. So what he has chosen to do is to say, okay, well, you know, here's some fresh meat for y'all. You know, y'all say, you know, I'm not really popping with the conservative Christians okay, yes, I do want to take away your health care, but what if I screw over some transgender people in the process? So if you put it in context, it's about him trying to shore up his base with symbolic wins that really don't even affect most of his base in their daily life. Like they'll never see what this means for them, but they will see the implications of his other more widespread policies. I feel like there's something in the back rooms going on that we don't necessarily know, because this is such a close vote on this healthcare bill, in the sense that
that's done. Healthcare didn't go through.
It didn't go through, but it's a zombie bill, right?
No, so it's done now. I mean, they've tried, right? So the final bill that was up for grabs was the skinny repeal, because every other thing has been tried, and that failed because McCain, who initially voted in favor of repeal, voted against the skinny repeal, surprisingly, after disappointing everyone while he is, you know, struggling with a brain tumor, which all of his healthcare is being funded by taxpayers, and then came and voted to take away people's healthcare. But in yesterday's final vote, the skinny repeal vote, he, along with Murkowski and a third senator, Republican senator, voted against this repeal bill, obviously in line with all of the Democrats.
I think that the hallmark of this Congress specifically is that they don't really have a whole lot of plans, and it's really hard for them to get things done. But they do know they want to undo everything that was done in the previous administration. So a lot of times we hear, okay, this is dead, this is dead, that's been done, that's been debated, that didn't even have it didn't see the light of day for the other party or whatever. All kinds of norms are being broken right now. And then things that should be like squashed will come back unceremoniously in 6 months, in 3 months, in a year. It's ridiculous. Like, I don't really think that we're dealing with a party of people that are trying to govern as usual. It's almost like you're dealing with a mafia, like they have a grudge. And so it's not about like if they will get you on it. It's about when, how severely, right? So they keep coming back like, nah, how about this? How about that? How about this? How about that? And it doesn't matter if it blocks all kinds of other stuff from happening. So it might not be healthcare that he is making a deal on. It might be something else that's not on our radar yet, right? Because I'm not deep in the policies enough. I'm not deep into Congress and the subtleties enough. It might be something else. But I'm sure that there will be something absolutely ridiculous passing along party lines that he is trying to shore up some sort of base for. I mean, like, he's making political speeches at Boy Scouts rallies. I mean, like, all of this, it's just red meat. It's desperation. So the more unpopular he gets, the more exclusionary, homophobic, white supremacist you will see him being. Because that's what's worked for him in the past. That's what's got him the presidency.
Well, the interesting part about this so-called ban is he announced it on the anniversary of President Harry Truman's order to desegregate the military.
Mm.
Further, he announced it in a way that everyone was utterly unprepared for. So even people who should know, speaking of, for example, the Department of Defense, they were all so unprepared for it that they couldn't even make statements about how it would be implemented because, as I've already stated, several thousand transgender service people already are on active duty, and it is unclear how this will affect them. Mm. So I would say, you know, we'll see how it goes. This announcement, especially because it was via Twitter, brought on bipartisan criticism. And it also seems that the reasons that he declared have no real bearing. But what I think is interesting is that people call on pop stars to talk about it.
Well, I mean, like, in such an odd political moment where the president's a pop star, right? I mean, the thing is that so one of the first presidents in my consciousness as an American was a pop star, was Reagan, right? So also, was a pop star. But the difference between Reagan and Trump is that Reagan went through a lot of pains to appear presidential, right? Like, so there was none of this.
He did also have, first of all, he had civil service before he even made that step, right?
Sure.
He was the governor of California. So
he went through the strokes, right? Like, it gave him name recognition, but generally, otherwise, is a pretty typical political career for a president.
Mm-hmm.
So we have now someone who is coming completely from the outside, has no civil service experience, and is just, you know, coming in and using actually pop techniques
like Twitter
to govern. Right, like Twitter to govern, using like reality techniques to govern, using PR techniques to govern, right? Mm-hmm. Like he, you know, when the last vote came down, like he had a burn list,
mm-hmm.
right? Senators that voted against him.
Yeah. He said he was going to retaliate against the entire state of Alaska because of the senator.
Mm-hmm. I mean, like a burn list, a president with a burn list, right? Mm-hmm. So you got pop techniques coming in to the civil service. I mean, usually at least there's a veneer of civility. There's a veneer, right? No, there's a veneer of like political back rubbing and a veneer of like, okay, listen, we are all adults here. That's gone.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like that kind of like fell away during the campaign, but it would have been different if it had not won. And it won. So now people understand that that's actually a viable strategy to use in the political sphere. I think it was kind of always used as sort of like this not explicit strategy,
mm-hmm.
like not the strategy that we saw. There was always some level of PR and shenanigans going on there, but now it's completely overt. There's no curtain of like, okay, we're all people that are trying to work together for the common good here. That's not even happening anymore. So he's just going to keep like this kind of playground bullying technique that has gotten him through life. This is what we're up against right now. And we don't really have a whole lot of politicians that are ready for this. They're not ready for this political moment.
In this week's second segment, you'll hear my conversations with four vendors at Afropunk London, which took place last weekend. I talked to them about their brand and the subject of cultural appropriation. My question derives from a blog post from Zipporah Jean, who in September of 2015 titled her blog post, "Black America, Please Stop Appropriating African Clothing and Tribal Marks." Yes, that means everyone at Afropunk too. As you can imagine, there were a lot of opinions and they were not all nice or constructive, but that's because of the language used in the blog post. For example, she writes, "It's a nuanced question that seems to either set tempers aflare or create vacuums of silence in a room. But after going through pictures taken at the latest Afropunk festival, it's definitely one that I have to ask. And if Blacks can, why is the disgust and uproar surrounding this ongoing phenomenon only reserved for instances when white people appropriate us?" She goes on to write, "Yes, I know that African-inspired prints are popping right now, and many African designers have chosen to showcase certain styles to the global fashion scene, but it appears to me and my African friends that it's been taken a step further. I understand that for the most part, many of my own Black American friends are well-meaning when they talk about African fashion, but the end result is still the same." Towards the end of the piece, she actually writes, "It's basically like a white Australian guy with dreadlocks, Tomoko, wearing batik. They are all islanders after all. So he's not being offensive, right? Africans may not be as vocal as Americans when it comes to appropriation, right? And I get that Black America's history is one marred with so many injustices that I would never claim to understand. The emergence of a unified voice that is strong and proud is one that I respect and continue to applaud. But please also understand the need for us to be heard too. Please don't trample our rights fighting for yours." And she ends with saying, "I stand by my words. I'm sorry. It's not futuristic or cool. It's our culture." So obviously there was a lot of talk around this and plenty of people, you know, got into conversation with people who enjoy wearing African prints, but I haven't heard many people actually talk to the people who are creating the designs that these so-called appropriators are wearing. So I had a conversation with some vendors about it. And I'd just like to warn you that the second question is always the question that I ask about appropriation, but I've cut out that part so you don't have to listen to it every time. And it is a little loud in the background because it was at Afropunk. So please forgive me for that. Let's have a listen. So can you start by telling me your name and the name of your brand?
Okay, so my My name is Jenaba Karoma, and my brand is Limba Gal Jewelry.
Okay, and what do you do exactly?
I'm a metal artist, so I make art jewelry, jewelry art. It's all different kind of variations and designs of ideas that I have. I like to play with different materials like sterling, copper, brass, bronze, and different gemstones, and also like found material, like kind of weird objects. Like I like to play with acrylic or like shells or just anything I could find to make something interesting out of. So I'm very much attracted to like sculptural design, and then also I incorporate a lot of African kind of influence in my work, just because I'm from Sierra Leone and that's kind of what my brand is based on. Limba Gal is like based on a name that I get called a lot. My dad is from the Limba tribe in Sierra Leone, and they always would tell me how similar I am to him all the time, so they're always like Limba Gal, Limba Gal, so I just decided to go with that.
How do you feel about that as someone who sells things that mm-hmm. are African inspired, mm-hmm. And you can't decide who buys it?
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't really think it's appropriation when it's something that's from your culture, even if you think that you're very far removed from it, because if you're black, you're from Africa. To me, you know, everybody comes from Africa, really, if you really look at history, like, you know, we're all African, really. But I don't think you can appropriate. I think it's kind of nice where people can come to a place and are allowed to experience their culture in whatever way that they want. So to me, I don't think anybody should dictate how anybody dresses or what they do. So for me, I don't have a problem with it. Like, I also, like, I guess for me also, my perspective might be a little bit different because I was born in the States. My parents are both from Sierra Leone, but I grew up in Africa too. So just also seeing like how in Africa, everybody, European culture is very appropriated there, and we change it into what we want. Like we mix it with our African culture. So like here in America or wherever you're from or wherever you live now, you're gonna mix that with whatever your influences are. And to me, that's dope. Like I think it's beautiful that people, you know, can express themselves. Like everybody's different, and they all have different upbringings, different things that make them who they are. So, you know, if they want to incorporate that and that makes them feel comfortable, then who's anybody else to say? So that's my answer for that. I'm just like, everybody do them. If anybody has a problem, well, I mean, you know, everybody's going to have a problem with something. So you have to like live your life in a way that makes you happy. So, and that's why I kind of like why I make jewelry that I make. Like my jewelry is not really mainstream. It's not really for everybody. It's definitely, some of the pieces are very artistic and gaudy. And like, you know, like some people might look at that and be like, oh, you know, I would never wear that. But then, you know, it's interesting how people kind of gravitate to certain pieces because they relate to it on a cultural level, or it reminds them of something, or, you know, it reminds them of a person or a place. So for me, that's kind of beautiful that when somebody will walk up and it's almost like the jewelry and the person, like they find each other, like it's some like weird relationship where they're like, ah, you know, so it's interesting to see that. So yeah, it's beautiful.
One last question. Mm-hmm. What do you like about Afropunk?
Interesting. Okay, so I've been vending at a few different Afropunks. Like I've done the one in New York, like maybe the last 4 years. I've also gone to the one in Atlanta and the one here now. So I think it's interesting because everyone is kind of curated a little bit differently. But I like it because I feel like it's a place where people can come and express themselves freely. Like they can come and dress the way that they want, and they can find like-minded people who are like looking for, you know, people who are interested in their culture, but then also like whatever different like little offshoots and like, you know, alternative things or whatever, you know, you're into, you'll just find like-minded people, you know. So I think it's good to have a space like that, you know, in this time, you know, where it's not so commercial, even though some people will say this is more commercial than it was when it started, which I'm sure that it is. But, you know, like, you create your community. So if you find people here that, you know, you vibe with, you can always, like, meet up with them later or somewhere else. But it's definitely, I feel like a lot of people keep coming to them, like, every year or every other year. And, you know, they just develop relationships in that way. And I think that's important.
Where can our listeners find you?
You can find me at limbagal.com or limbagal on Instagram, limbagal on Facebook. So,
thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, so my name's Nathan, or Nathaniel Williams. My brand is called Asher. Asher is the Yoruba word for cloth. And the whole idea and concept behind our brand is everybody in the African diaspora are like threads. And we come together and we create a cloth which has different textures, different colors. But ultimately, we're all part of the same thing with a common root, common heritage.
Very nice. How do you see that as someone who makes clothing and you can't decide who your customer is?
Okay. I think the whole issue around appropriation, first of all, I think when you do things and you understand the context, the meaning, I think you can't say that's appropriation. But also, African Americans descend from people who are, funny enough, appropriated. So it wasn't by choice that they've been separated from the original heritage, the original culture. So I think the fact that people are actually looking to embrace it is something which is positive, and it's almost like working towards a reunion of people and culture. So yeah, I'm not so caught up on the whole issue about appropriation, but as with anything, it's about at least making an effort to understand the context of what you're wearing or what you're presenting.
And what brought you to make these designs?
Okay, so I'm of Nigerian descent, Yoruba. My dad at the time was living in a place called Festac Village. And Festac Village was actually built as part of a cultural Olympiad known as Festac. The 1977 edition was being held in Lagos, and the mask of Yoruba Idia, the ivory pendant mask, which you can see now in the British Museum, that was used as the emblem of that event. So when I went to go visit my dad with the rest of the family, that mask was almost ever present, and it just had a really big impact on me and left a really big impression. And I always thought that'd make a great t-shirt. It took me about 20 years to turn that idea into reality, but that kind of set me on a path around creating a brand, recognizing people across the diaspora, because I was doing a lot more travel to places like Brazil, to Panama, Colombia. And once I created that t-shirt, it just kind of fired my imagination and motivation to collaborate with more artists to create more creations.
One last question. What do you like about Afropunk?
Afropunk, number one, it's about African cultural, musical, creative expression, but with no limits. I think we have a lot of things when we see black people, African people presented in the media. It's very contained, it has limits, it's almost stereotypical in a lot of ways, but this event is a great reminder about the diversity, depth, and breadth of black and African culture.
Thank you. So if people who listen to the podcast, where can they find you?
Okay, they can find me on www.aso-global.com.
Thank you, Nathaniel.
You're welcome. Thank you very much.
What's your name and what's your brand?
My name is Unique Sivanda, and my brand is Le Akaya.
And what type of things do you sell?
I make statement handmade jewelry, and that's what I sell. It's all handmade, so literally every single piece has passed through my hands at some point.
How do you feel about that as someone who is selling beautiful articles, but you can't decide who buys it?
Okay, I've had this discussion before about cultural and appropriation. It's, at the end of the day, when African print came to Africa, it was not African print. How then do we have the right to tell someone else, if they like something, what to wear? Because we've literally taken Dutch fabric and called it our own.
Whoa, I didn't know that. Amazing.
So it's in the same way, my jewelry is a form of my expression. I am culturally diverse. I grew up in Zimbabwe. I lived there till I was 21. I've been here for 18 years. So my formative years in my 20s, I was here. So my culture, I don't fit in back home in Zimbabwe because my culture is now merged with British culture. I've got certain British things that I've taken on. So I personally think we have to be a bit more accepting of inspiration. If it comes from culture, fair enough. People travel so much nowadays. You can never. My stuff has been mistaken for Asian. It's been mistaken for Southern African. It's been mistaken for Spanish. So who am I to say that they're wrong? Because they could think that I'm copying, I'm misappropriating their culture, whereas I'm drawing inspiration from my own culture, which just coincides with theirs. So we just need to. I was going to say a rude word, but I'm going to stop. So really, we just need to be careful about using that word, cultural misappropriation, because at the end of the day, what is culture really?
One last question. What do you like about Afropunk?
Diversity, cultural diversity, cultural merging of different ideas, the fashion, the expressiveness, because the same people would never dress like that out on the street tomorrow. So it's very interesting seeing them in a confined space and being able to express themselves, because Londoners are very grey and black. But it's amazing seeing them coming to Afropunk and being able to express themselves, which is, yeah, it's great.
Where can our listeners find you?
They can find me at Spitalfields Market from Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday and Monday. Online at lekhaya.com. That's LEKHAYA.com. On Etsy, which is Lekhaya as well. On Not on the High Street and on Suva as well, the American website.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Hi, I'm Mariatu Ture, and I own Gita's Portal.
And what type of brand is that? What do you do?
It's a mid-range luxury brand for women in particular, but we also do men's and children and accessories.
How do you feel about that as someone who's a business owner and can't control who wears your clothes?
I get the cultural appropriation arguments, okay? And I do have an issue myself when people don't understand and sort of, if you like, for want of a better word, maybe trespass on another person's culture and, you know, if you like, take the sensitive bits of it without permission and roll it out for making money, okay? But what a lot of people like myself do, and being Sierra Leonean, of course, I'm sensitive about that simply because, you know, I come from the Timini tribe. We have particular prints and, you know, other aesthetics that are particular. They have deep meaning, so I wouldn't trespass on that myself. But what a lot of people like myself do is that we use mainstream prints, if you like, for want of a better word. And for me, I see this as an opportunity for us to really promote brand Africa, if you like, and try and change the perception of what Africa is all about. Because a lot of what you hear about Africa, of course, is always negative. But I think this gives us an opportunity to open that dialogue. And I think fashion is always one of those things that you can use to open dialogue, if you like, in a neutral space and sort of have those intelligent discussions about issues that are sort of important to everybody. And for me, when I, you know, share this side of my culture, because I am African, and using the African print is a very good way to sort of have those discussions, but in a sort of neutral and an easygoing way, which means that you can have those discussions without feeling, you know, I guess uncomfortable about it. So when I use my prints, I am using them in a way that says, you know, you're welcome to come and try a bit of my culture, and I feel proud that I can bring it to you, as opposed to, I guess, other brands that think they can just take it, use it without even giving credit and all that sort of stuff.
One last question. What do you like about Afropunk?
I think it's the whole vibe, the energy. I love it. Of course, you know, it's all about, again, all the isms, as I sometimes just summarize and say it. And I think it's really good to have people come together and celebrate that. Of course, you know, the energy is really good here. I follow Afropunk, I could say maybe around the world. So I've been to the ones in America that are being held there. And I think it's just nice to just see people come together and unite over, you know, something that's meaningful. Yeah.
Where where can our listeners find you?
You can find me on the internet, of course. If you just go to gitasportal.com or you type in gitasportal.com, I'll spell that for you. GITASPORTAL.com. We're also on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And just type in gitasportal.com and you find us, or gitasportal and you find us.
Thank you.
In our final segment, as always, what are we excited about? What are we looking forward to? Ooh, ooh, ooh.
Yes. You start.
Nope.
Aha! I gotta start.
Yes.
Girl, you know I'm a shut in.
Really? Really? Let's hear it. What you got? What's going on?
You know I'm a shut in. You know I'll just be up on the spot.
Oh my goodness. Okay, fine. I will start because I actually know what I'm excited about. I'm going to give you some think time. You obviously have not thought about it yet. I am excited that the film that debuted with the largest box office opening weekend for a live action comedy in 2017, if you don't know what I'm talking about, that is Girls Trip, with an all-star black female cast, Jada Pinkett Smith, Tiffany Haddish, Regina Hall, Queen Latifah. Yes, yes, I have put a group together and we are going to see that on Saturday. So I don't know why a bunch of queer women are going to go watch what is probably a very heteronormative storyline. But
they're not even going to give us Set It Off, Jada. They're not even going to give
I don't think so. I don't think we're going to get any of that. Judging by the trailer, I don't think so. But, you know, you got to take your scraps where they come. So a bunch of queer women, we're going to go watch that this weekend and we're going to be excited about it because such is life. Black women on the screen is something to get excited about. That's what I'm excited about. And I am thoroughly, thoroughly, thoroughly excited about the things that I saw coming out of Comic-Con. So one of my close friends was at Comic-Con. He's there every year in San Diego. And he basically like just fills up my Instagram feed with all of his great things. And but what was really fun to see was the cast of Black Panther watching for the very first time a clip. They had not seen it. And they were like, just see, obviously we didn't get to see it, right? We just saw their reactions to it. But just watching their reactions to it has me so pumped for that film.
Yeah, because I imagine so much of that was filmed on green screen.
Yeah, of course.
So, you know, it could have been on some B-movie nonsense. Right? Like, yeah, here comes this Muppet talking about, I'm the evil villain, right? But yeah, man.
Yeah. So what are you excited about?
So yeah, I'm excited about those things as well. Also.
Vienna already got Girls Trip.
No. We're going to have to wait. You know, we got to wait at least 2 weeks for Girls Trip to come to us. But this is just a tremendous year for sci-fi and for Black women in sci-fi as well. There's this blog that I've been following called Graveyard Sisters, and they kind of chronicle Black women in science fiction. Mm-hmm. And so this is like the year of A Wrinkle in Time. This is the year where our girl is going to be our first main lead Black female assassin.
Next year.
Yeah, it's starting. We got the trailer this year. I'm a hold on to that. But yeah, I'm especially looking forward to A Wrinkle in Time because this is something I'm not sure if I could bring the kids to Black Panther. I got to see how that goes.
Yeah, you might want to watch that first.
Right. We're not sure. But like something for the children.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, that's like massive because I never actually thought that in my lifetime that there would be high quality, big budget motion pictures with Black leads for children.
For children. Mm-hmm.
Right. So that's massive.
Well,
that's
absolutely that massive. Ava DuVernay, Oprah Winfrey.
Power couple.
I was really like trying to choose my words properly, but yes, that's unstoppable right there.
I'm hoping so. You know, Tyler Perry left and went to
Tyler.
Come on out. We don't got. You listen.
Don't have to compare Ava with Tyler. Well, that's all for this week. If you would like to keep up with us, you can follow us on Twitter at Queer Truth. We'd love to hear your thoughts on some of the things we've discussed today, so feel free to get at us. And if you can, drop us some change at patreon.com/thequeertruth. Until next time, peace out.